This episode is brought to you by our incredible community of listener supporters on Patreon. Our Patreon offers listeners exclusive archival content, extended episodes, and access to community conversations diving deeper with past guests. Your monthly pledge ensures that For the Wild has the funding to keep producing informative, thoughtful, and rooted conversations and programming. All funding supports our small team of creatives, podcast production, and special For the Wild projects like our zines and slow study courses. To support us on Patreon, please visit patreon.com/forthewild. Or if you would rather make a one-time donation or recurring donation outside of Patreon, please visit forthewild.world/donate. Hello, For the Wild community. This week, we are thrilled to bring you a special conversation from a dear friend of the podcast, Bayo Okomolafe. Recorded while in Ghana for the Three Black Men tour, this conversation features the voices of Bayo Okomolafe, Resma Menakem, Orland Bishop, Victoria Santos, and Okegbe Omonblanc's Omiemi, all of whom were involved with the conversation and presentation of the Three Black Men tour. In 2023, Resmin, Bayo, and Orland shared space as they visited three cities across three continents, tracing a diasporic route in reverse from Los Angeles in the United States to Salvador in Brazil, and finally to Accra in Ghana. These three visionary Black men sharing their leading edges are inviting us into a radical reimagination of how we respond to our time. They sense into emergent possibilities, triangulating towards a synthesis of new forms, new magic, and new directions. In their beloved writings and teachings, these explorers investigate community, racial and social justice, individual and collective trauma, ritual and healing, new cultural forms, the promise of the monstrous, and deep interior capacities. Their theme connects vibrant conversations on matters of embodiment, exploration of the sacred and the ancestral, and visions of other places of power and alternative futures. This conversation offers insight into the thoughts that moved through the team as they undertook this journey. Orland Bishop is the founder and director of Shade Tree Multicultural Foundation in Los Angeles, where he has pioneered approaches to urban truces and mentoring at-risk youth that combine new ideas with traditional ways of knowledge. Shade Tree serves as an intentional community of mentors, elders, teachers, artists, healers, and advocates for the healthy development of children and youth. Orland's work in healing and human development is framed by an extreme study of medicine, naturopathy, psychology, and indigenous cosmologies, primarily those of South and West Africa. Resma Menakem is an American author and psychotherapist specializing in the effects of trauma on the human body and the relationship between trauma, white body supremacy, and racism in America. He is the founder of Justice Leadership Solutions, a leadership consultancy firm where he dedicates his expertise to coaching leaders through civil unrest, organizational change, and community building. Menakem created Cultural Somatics, which utilizes the body and resilience as mechanisms for growth. He is the best-selling author of My Grandmother's Hands, Racialized Trauma and the Pathway to Mending Our Hearts and Bodies, and was described by On Being's Krista Tippett, quote, activates the wisdom of ancestors in a very new science about how all of us carry the history and traumas behind everything we collapse into the word race in our bodies. Bayo Okomolafe is the chief curator of the Emergence Network, a speaker, author, fugitive, neo-materialist, compost activist, public intellectual, and Yoruba poet. But when he takes himself less seriously, he is a father of Alethea and Kaya and the Grateful Life partner of EJ, as well as the sworn washer of nightly archives of dishes. The conveyor of the concepts of post-activism, transraciality, and onto fugitivity, Bayo is a widely celebrated international speaker, teacher, public intellectual, essayist, and author of two books, These Wilds Beyond Our Fences, Letter to My Daughter on Humanity's Search for Home, and We Will Tell Our Own Stories, The Lions of Africa Speak, He is also the executive director and chief curator for the Emergence Network and hosts the online post-activist course, We Will Dance with Mountains. Victoria Santos' work is rooted in a far-reaching vision of human potential. She has a deep commitment to our collective liberation. Her work emphasizes intersectional awareness, individual and collective healing, and compassionate action. She is the founder and director of the Center for Healing and Liberation, an organization focused on healing, wellness, and racial justice practices. Additionally, as founder and co-executive director of BIPOC ED Coalition, Victoria is part of a cultural change movement that prioritizes health and wellness. Victoria advocates for more resources to flow towards BIPOC-led nonprofits and calls in philanthropic partners and other allies to reimagine their roles and commitment to working with BIPOC-led organizations in more powerful ways. She is the co-creator of the BIPOC ED Sabbatical Program and the Respite and Restoration Program in Washington State. Victoria knows the power of community and the wisdom that can emerge from it. Her work is guided by the deep knowing that everyone is needed, and that when we offer each other our compassionate listening, we cultivate our collective freedom. Victoria is a Spanish-fluent, Afro-Latina immigrant born in the Dominican Republic, living on land of the Snohomish people, although somewhat nomadic as of late. Amon Blanks is a creative director, festival curator, producer, and programmer. He has a 15-year career in music, film, and as an indie label and record producer. He is the founder and creative director of TAC, the Art Concept Organization, a documentation and archive-focused platform interested in studying African and Black societies from community, city, and country perspectives. This is where he researches documents towards the building of an archive. We hope you enjoy this look into the pressing questions of our times as discussed by these incredible individuals.
It's good to be with y'all in this, at the turning of the tide, at this crease, this beautiful crease. In the fabric of our gathering together. It's been wonderful being here, hosted in this beautiful country, Ghana, whose story is intricately tied with the saga of Blackness. Right? And I will first go around and let's introduce ourselves. To bring ourselves into the room. So I'll just start from the brains, the beauty, the heart, the muscle behind this beautiful project. Victoria.
Thank you, Brother Bayo. My name is Victoria Santos, and I hail from the Dominican Republic. And it feels really wonderful to be here in Accra. And my body recognizes the soil. So thank you so much, Brother.
Beautiful. And before I get to Brother Resma, I will introduce the spirit of this of this particular iteration. Brother Amon Blanks is the organizer of the Ghana leg of this Three Black Men project, and I'm just going to invite him to introduce himself.
Yeah, thank you very much. So I'm Ohuebe Omo Blanks, Omoimi. I always now explain the meaning of my name. Ohuigbe meaning war, W-A-R, won't kill me. Omoimi, which is my surname, means this child will save me. So I'm a complete embodiment of my name. I find calmness in chaos. So and also the entire foundation of this has been built on activated home. And for me, my body's home. So what does it mean to be at home when you are away from your physical home? Mm-hmm. And that was the spirit for this. And I want to thank Victoria, because when we had our first meetings and series of meetings, I kept on saying, would you allow me articulate this the way I think? Yes. Mm-hmm. And that permission was given. And yes, we are here now.
And Victoria was just chilling.
Which we never see.
Which we never see. She's chilling all the way. Just chilling and relaxing and vibing.
Brother, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Our gratitude, our long gratitude to you. And then he needs no introduction. He wears sequined gloves and socks, and he does the moonwalk on occasion.
With a purple guitar.
With a purple guitar. My big brother, Resma Menachem, and as part of this trio of brotherhood exploring blackness, Resma, you want to say something else?
First of all, thank you, brother. Thank you for hosting this particular thing, but thank you for agreeing to go on this journey with me, and do this. And I'm saying that not just to you, but to Brother Oman, to Victoria, Brother Orland. This you know, you always hear, you hear people talk about, you know, it's a journey and stuff like that. But it's one thing to go on something together. It's an entirely different thing to stay with the experience. You know, you can always go someplace, you know what I mean? But sometimes you get in the middle of going and you're like, I don't know if I want to continue this. And I just appreciate how, and it's something that I'm working with in my life, and that this trip has actually helped me. It's kind of seared some things in me. And it's the piece around tenderness and softness and flexibility and the kind of coming to grips with the warring pieces of me, and the kind of monstrous pieces of me and this experience here in Ghana has really, like, just all the way down to the images of W.E.B. Du Bois and Kwame Nkrumah. And you know what I mean? Like, it's just like my elders have talked to me about them. And so then for me to go to W.E.B. Du Bois's grave, it's just like, you know, so I just want to thank everybody for this experience. It's just, it couldn't have, like, this experience couldn't have been any better for me.
Thank you, brother. Thank you. And I will introduce myself as well. My name is Bayo Akomolafe, and I, at this time, I'm acutely aware of the of what prophecy is. And as I've been saying for some time, prophecy isn't merely predicting the future. You know, like forecasting or analyzing trends or futurism. No, prophecy isn't that. Prophecy doesn't look like a highway. Prophecy looks like a crossroads. It's a reconvening of the past and the present and the future to do other kinds of work. It's an invitation to look again. And this entire project, right from, you know, the outset, the gates in LA, passing through Salvador and then landing here in Ghana, has been a beautiful invitation to look again, to re-examine, to turn things over, to play with, to undo, to unfurl, to break open. So I'm grateful that we are here at this turning of the tide, and that we can do new things together in the Three Black Men Project. And just in the way this is a co-emergent, open-ended process, we've just had Brother Orland join us. And Brother Orland is part of this beautiful assemblage of power and the otherwise, that is the Three Black Men Project. Resma has introduced himself. I have as well.
We're just going to open up space for you to also introduce yourself and say something about what it means to be here. Brother Orlin.
Oh. Here is expanding every moment, every moment. And I want to be more here for a longer time.
That's exactly right.
And today I realize, it's coming to this point. But what I know is here is our relationships that I think will be for the lifetime. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And to have returned to resume what our ancestors had already started. Mm-hmm. Time is no longer just, a lost space, but it's here. Time has been waiting for us.
Yes.
And I felt today that what I've integrated into my time body is life stories that have been in the different aspects of the soil, the rain, the sun, and the people.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very different. I feel myself to be so.
Right.
And sleep works differently, nutrition works differently. So this is kind of accepting myself again.
Accepting myself again.
Yes. I think because the fundamental thing about initiation is return again, not to what was before.
Yes.
But to the agreements for me that makes me more useful to what I'm trying to bring into the world.
Beautiful.
So my will is open.
You're welcome, brother.
Thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
Thank you.
Brother Orlin Bishop is from Guyana, and with this beautiful village that has been traveling, we've been hosted and welcomed to Ghana. And just before we say anything more about this exploration, for those of us who are hearing about three black men for the first time, I think we just want to tell very briefly the story of the project. And Sister Victoria will say something about the story. What is Three Black Men?
Well, for the bio, as you know, every time we tell the story, it changes, right?
It's too dynamic.
And it changes because it's, in some ways, more gets revealed every time. Because it's part of us seeing in each other and seeing ourselves. And within the community that gathers, we see more and more. And so I can tell you that for me, it started out with a dream and a desire to have you be in conversations with each other.
Yeah.
And part of it came out of my own sense of almost desperation, because I spent the past 30 plus years working in predominantly spaces that were forming and shaping and looking at women's issues. Mm-hmm. And I realized that there was a part of me that had really ignored men and black men in particular, and ignore the plight that my brothers have been under. And when I kind of confronted that in myself, I sought some counsel from a dear friend, and she gave me some guidance, which was not to stay out of the binary and not just be thinking, oh, I'll have two of you have a conversation, but to really invite all three of you. Mm-hmm. And when you responded back after I sent the email and you were like, yes, yes, it was so, it felt like the energy was so clear and so pure and beautiful. And I was so excited that immediately I called my brother Orlin.
Thank you.
And so, Orland, I'm going to throw it to you now to just, you can continue the, what happened when you heard that, when you heard me speaking about this?
Brother Bio and I met in Brazil. Yes. And I'm like, yes. Do we get to do more of that?
Yes, yes, yes.
You know, the relational space was quite clear. But I felt also that you don't ask for something unless you know what it could be. You know, you have nurtured a lot.
Yeah.
And I felt intention to give something to you in service of. So it wasn't just about us, and it was including the dream that you brought. And there were times when you said, you know, the three black men, I'm saying, and Victoria. Because there's no three black men.
Or Victoria and the three black men. Yeah.
Like last night in the pits. Yeah.
So because one thing I know, there are people who trust you with what they do in the world or what they need to be doing in the world. And it felt like that was one of the opportunities. And it became clearer and clearer and clearer as we moved through. Look how many people have shown up to do it.
And from LA, we flew to Bahia, Salvador, Brazil. And Resma, do you want to just say something about being in Brazil?
Yeah. You know, I think for me, Bahia, Salvador, one of the things it did for me is that I kept hearing you two talk about technology, the technology of black people and the technology of what we have, and not technology in terms of Twitter or something like that, but technology in terms of what it is that we as black people have that's so tied to creation that if we could just begin to cultivate it and act like it is actually intelligence as opposed to throw away things like, oh, it's just aesthetic, right? That's what Bahia did for me. Like I remember a couple times where we would be talking and then people just break in the dance. And I was just everybody started dancing. Yep. You know, and how much joy, how much it didn't usurp the what we needed to say. It actually added to it, actually, like, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It actually, that technology in Salvador and Bahia helped me go, this is real. Like, this is a tangible thing. And so ever since then, I've been writing, I've been talking about the technology of blackness, the technology in not just the pigmentation of blackness, but the technology of it. And Ghana just like blew the doors open for me.
Beautiful. Yeah. Brother. And that brings us to Ghana, the organizer, the engine room for this.
The conductor,
everything, his voice, the stentorian voice, was powerful in convening us to space, attending when it needed to be tender. It was tender when it needed to be gargantuan. It was like, I'm Nigerian, you know, everyone get on the bus. Everyone knew to get on the bus. And you need that. We need in unprecedented times an organizer.
That's exactly right.
A convener. Brother Omon, do you want to say something about Ghana, what it has meant for you and the vortices of experiences streaming through? And how you've been able to hold this space with the team?
What does it mean to make space for even space makers? Right? You know, I wanted you all to see that time was slowing down for each of you. I wanted to make a pot of soup. I love to cook, you know. So I wanted to make a pot of soup that everybody can eat and it activates home. Not a pot of soup where everybody agrees that this is what we're eating, or a pot of soup where everybody has a different reality, you know. Each plate presents something different. So, and that's not easy to make. That's why every time you see, I always say thank you to Victoria. It's not a thank you for giving me this. It's a thank you for letting go, you know, so that I can make this space. So it's been amazing to see people come in, you know, and find the things that they need to find. Yeah, so Ghana for me is, it's this is how it should be, you know? And I'm not saying that in a prescriptive way, like, oh, this is, no, but this is how it should be. And whatever that means, you know, this is how it should be, you know? When my grandmother transitioned, last year, June, I cared for her until, and I don't mean in a physical way, the responsibility of taking care of her in this last bits of her life, you know, it's a responsibility that nobody can really explain. And in a transition, I have not been able to go back, you know, to see where she laid last, to see the things she has left behind. Nobody can access that but me, because everybody knows she has left it for me. But the thing that I understand is that I don't need to go there to get all the things she has given me. And that's what, for me, this space is. It's for every single person who has made it to be able to access things that are not tangible. Yeah.
Thank you, brother. Thank you. There's a lot going on there. It felt like you had located a crack in the sky and you were, you know, conveying down gifts from this opening in the sky to our bellies and to our heads and to our arms and to our bodies. So, again, thank you very much.
Thank you
again and again. Three Black Men is a spiritual vocation. It's a vocation in thought leadership. It's a vocation in Black scholarship. It's a vocation at the end of times, when new kinds of thought, new kinds of postures, new kinds of prayers, new kinds of rituals need to be performed. And it follows, it's new and it's old. it's old because it draws and is nourished by the breaths of legacies, prestigious thought that has preceded us. I'm not going to drop names now because that would take 30 minutes to get through, but we are drawing powerfully from people that have gone before us to address these moments. I will pay particular attention to the words of Caribbean scholar Aimee Césaire when he said, and C.L.R. James particularly, when he said, Black studies is not just for Black people. It's for addressing the man. And by the man, he meant the colonial enterprise of oppression that continues to put bodies under. How do we address that? Every time the world hardens, cracks are the first responders. And cracks are the bedrock or the space for Blackness to thrive. I want us brothers to speak particularly about the themes that have innervated this exploration, especially how we framed it in the beginning, trauma, ritual, and the promise of the monstrous. Mm-hmm. We had design ideas, mm-hmm. and I don't think, just for folks to know that, the world is more than design. And the world has hidden careers mm-hmm. of its own. It spills away from designation.
Exactly right.
Right? But we did have themes guiding our meeting with communities, meeting with traditional rulers, mm-hmm. meeting with villages, meeting with groups, meeting with people of all different kinds. I want Brother Resma to speak about trauma.
Yeah.
And how that has come in. What are the questions emerging for you?
Yeah.
And what's staying here?
So for me, you know, my understanding of trauma has emerged and evolved since I've been in this project. You know, that's like, especially like trauma as it relates to the body, trauma as it relates to racialized trauma. Yes. Those are the kind of like the ways that I move in. But this idea of trauma as a thwarting energy, as a thwarting apparatus that thwarts what is emergent, possible, and resourced, mm-hmm. right? It doesn't kill it. It just thwarts it, right? And we can get conditioned by the thwarting. And one of the things that I've appreciated is that, like, even this experience that we're having here, one of the things that I've never been involved in a large project like this, in which Brother Omar deliberately brought in intimacy and care. Like the level of intimacy and care in this type of project, I have never seen this before. I've seen people be nice. I've seen people have scheduled. I've seen, you know what I mean? But not to the degree. I mean, so let me just say it like this. So down to the detail of us going to the dungeon with our shoes off, the somatic. And what I mean by somatic is from the Swahili word soma, mm-hmm. which means to learn to read, mm-hmm. and the Latin word body, right? Like I've incorporated the idea of both those ideas of soma, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and that when we were there was so much learning and reading that I'm starting to see now mm-hmm. from a lot of the experiences that this brother has put into place, like mm-hmm. the walking barefoot into there and then peering off to the right and noticing the ocean and hearing the ocean as we're walking barefoot to the dungeons. Was such a genius move in terms of intimacy. Like before we even get there, there's an intimacy that's starting to happen with the cobblestones and the heat and having to walk on your toes. And it was... You know what I mean? So the three black men thing for me has emerged and evolved into this really kind of seminal understanding of intimacy and care, which is the center of blackness. Like when we're talking about the sloshing of us as people, right? When we talk about the gurgling, and I said this earlier, the gurgling of creation, which is blackness, it is that we are a representation of that. And what we have to begin to do, and Brother Orland talked about this yesterday, we have to begin to strip away all of the things that people have put on blackness and put on these things and begin to like not return as in we were once kings and queens or black excellence and, you know, I can't say that word, but you know what I mean? Like, you know, the talented 10th and all of that stuff, you know, and I'm not knocking my ancestors or people who are saying it. I'm just simply saying there has to be something more mooring.
Anchoring.
And anchoring than that, mm-hmm. that I know myself to be connected to creation differently than just the pigmentation pieces. I'm not saying the pigmentation pieces aren't important.
Yeah.
I'm saying that the pigmentation pieces have to be moored in the architecture and the principle of blackness. And each step, each leg of this journey has deepened that peace for me.
Thank you, Resma. Thank you. We've been talking about the brace, right?
Yeah.
All the exterior exoskeleton that is taken on in order to preserve ourselves in a world that no longer seems like it's working for anyone, And that brace, that exoskeleton is constantly curdled by the invitation of tenderness to lose its hard edges, you know, to lose its hard edges and to become a lot more porous. This idea of things, of the world being a practice. The world is a practice. Yes. The world isn't just world containing practices. The world itself is a practice.
Yes.
The world is ritual. And that's what we're thinking about when we also encoded the story of ritual in this cross-continental vocation we call Three Black Men. Brother Orlin, could you speak to this idea of ritual, the stories emanating from this place, the invitations, whatever is coming from your depths about ritual these times, and especially situating it within the journeys we undertook across the world?
Yeah, brother. Rituals move energies within the context of thresholds, right? So something is here and then it's not. It's a kind of vessel for what replaces what. Within the context of a knower, a believer, a seeker, you know, the different titles for where the ritual begins and what flows because of the intentions of one of those roles in the idea that the archetypal world that forms the pathway for something to change requires someone to put something in. And this unique kind of divination for someone to look into the realm of possibilities and say, I will actually reach in and bring something back that is needed now from all of those things. Rituals have given us remarkable ways to create life and meanings around life. And at the time and the space where collapse is what it is in our world, it's the fundamental thing that's left. Because we've created so many status rituals to position people in roles that have nothing to do with ritual.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Right. The rituals that people do now only actually avoid and denies the existence of other intelligences that can make a better world. Mm-hmm. So, like, why would you choose, you know, certain people to put in power that actually makes the world less vibrant.
Yeah.
So when they leave office, it's like, okay, we're in debt. We're in, you know, we're in such dilemmas because they don't know the role of ritual. So in the sense, what I think we have restored in our it's the architecture of mystery around a threshold or a door. So we went to the door of no return and came back out of the door of return. The same door.
Same door.
What is the conceptual intention that makes the same material space different? And everything changes when you go through one side and then come back the other side. Mm-hmm. In a matter of just minutes, you're a different person.
Seconds. Mm-hmm.
Seconds on two different sides of the same reality. Mm-hmm. So for me, the human being is a ritualist. In the fact that we don't allow ourselves to just repeat things when we know the power of what we're doing. We can create, we can let go, we can change, we can heal, we can. And so I think for my practice with rituals would be, what currencies are still with us that can make rituals a radical space of renewing this world? What currencies do we still have? And can we activate them? Because we in a time in which there's so many restraints and substitutions for what actually allows life to be optimum in the world, rituals have to come back more and more.
Can I add, can I just add something?
Yeah,
this piece of that Brother Orla said earlier about how things are here and then they go away. I think it isn't disconnected from ritual. In that part of what happens is that we think ritual means to do the same thing over and over and over again.
Yes, that's how we use the term.
But what Brother Orland is talking about really is is how it functions, how ritual actually functions, right? He's saying there is a time where a ritual begins to almost affetry itself. There's a loosening of muscle and there's not enough energy. People are still doing it and doing this.
It doesn't take.
There is no muscle to it. It's just what people are doing.
Yeah.
And what he's saying, what I hear him saying is that in those points, we need somebody else who understands. Like we need a holder, we need a seer, we need those roles have to be activated in a way that says that particular ritual, there needs to be something else that ritual is now creating the decay by which the other system can now come up through. It actually creates the nutrients. The decay of that particular ritual literally creates the nutrients for the new ritual to come about. But if you don't have people that don't need permission, you need the fugitive, you need the trickster, you need the seers, you need people to say, you should be playing. You should be playing. You should be playing, because in the playing, that piece will begin to emerge forth. In the not playing, you do a disservice, not only to yourself, because your purpose is not emerging, but you do a disservice to creation itself. Is that
absolutely making sense? Yes. Yes.
Jina langu ni Galani, Galani. Jina langu ni Galani, Asili Chicha. Jina langu ni Galani, Asili Chicha. Galani, Galani, la kini walini bachina. Kikuloni sasa na jijua kukutiti ya ulimi ya wabulasi sasa na jijukuti ya ulimi ya wabulani.
I want to bring us to a place. I'll say a few things about the monstrous, the space of the monstrous. First of all, just to trace where we've been, trauma is connected to the loss or the rigidity of ritual, if you will. When things, when we brace up, when we become fixed, we're having a crisis of form, which is, in other words, a crisis of ritual. And it's in that crisis that new forms of ritual are needed. But for new forms of ritual to take, new roles need to be proliferated. New energies need to burst forth. The archetype of the leader, the archetype of the priest, the archetype of the trickster, all need to come up. And this is where the monstrous takes root. So they're all, these things are not disconnected and thrown together. They are, they literally trace out a thematic score, if you will. I've been thinking about the monstrous in terms of this edge, you know, and or rather more playfully, as a jigsaw puzzle. In a jigsaw puzzle, you expect, if the company knows its stuff, to get a puzzle with all the pieces. Your task is to put them all together. Imagine a scenario where you have all the pieces together, but and you've put the picture together. It's complete. There's nothing else except this one piece that doesn't belong anywhere in the puzzle. It doesn't fit the shape. It doesn't look like any of the other puzzle pieces. It's just out. You know, it doesn't even feel like an extra piece. An extra piece will will replace another piece in there. But this doesn't feel like a replacement at all. So you call the company and you're complaining and you speak with the manager, wink, wink, and then you insist that they explain to you this extra piece, but they cannot account for it as well. And so you either, you do one of two things. You either pathologize the piece, you toss it away, or you hold that piece as something promising. As something, maybe it doesn't have a name yet. It's not useful, but it's something to come, right? And I think that's where we are. Our rituals, our modern rituals, have rendered us so useful that we're trapped. So we fit in, finally, completely. We fit in, and to fit in, as that Chinese apocryphal curse goes, if you are entirely useful and you fit in, there's sometimes when fitting in becomes deeply problematic, and you want a way out. You want a different kind of ritual. You need the illegible or the non-legible for that. White modernity is the idea that the world is fully described already. Blackness is the invitation to consider that the world is still being made.
That's exactly right.
It is still being made. It is still in formation. It is not done yet. And that is where creativity and emancipation comes from. And that has been the promise of the monstrous, that in times when Africa is going through a lot of trouble, the world is going through a lot of trouble, that there is space for agency.
Yeah.
There's agency, there's power, there's potency, there's ritual, there's a way to go here. And maybe I just want to bring us to a close, if you will.
Yeah.
A close that is also an opening. I'll call it a clopening, along with some of my other siblings around the world, a clopening.
Yeah.
Where is... what? How would you respond to the question, where do we go from here? Responding not only on behalf of this beautiful project, but on behalf of people who are listening, who are probably leaning in and wondering for a different kind of convening. Like, where do we go from here? What are your words? If blackness is care, not just pigmentation of skin, if blackness is the materiality of care, what is the care we are offering to people listening now? I'll start with my sister Victoria, and then we'll go to Amon and Resma. I want Orlen to end, so I will say a few words and then Orlen ends us up. Okay, Victoria.
where do we go from here and where do I go from here? I need some time to reflect. Mm-hmm. I want to go back and look at what we have done and go back and tend to some of those relationships.
Yes.
And then we're making a documentary as well.
Yes.
So we need to look at what are the needs of that of the documentary and focus some energy in that. And then there's already some other things that are kind of percolating based on who's been coming around us that I want to pay attention to. Like Oman is going to be coming to the U.S. in April, and I volunteered to host him. And so there's that. And so those are some of the things. And then hopefully more conversations with you three to figure out, what are you needing to do within your own project and also maybe something collectively. But
briefly, sister, not to interrupt you, but we've made plans to visit Orlan's home planet.
Yes.
Of Mars.
Well, I want to move there. So Orlan, I have my bags packed. You just have to tell me when you're ready for me to go. So yeah. Anyway, those are the things that I'm gonna look at. But first I'm gonna have a nice long rest.
Please. That's rest. Yes. Brother Amon.
Where do we go from here? For me, as I move through space now a lot, my intentionality is to just be me. You know? Just be me. And this is exactly how I've been. You know, like you said, sometimes hard, sometimes soft.
Yes.
You know, the space to know that I can be rigid and fluid. Mm-hmm. You know, and not taking any particular side. And to rope it to you understand this is I am a shoe. You know?
Yeah.
So
The black and the red showed up every time. I noticed this. Maybe many people didn't notice it, but I saw it every time. The black and red.
Yes. I have no space. There's no politics. Mm-hmm. You know? So for me, like that, back to that pot of soup is everyone can access. Mm-hmm. Even those people that my physical body is in disagreement with still can enter this space.
Yeah.
I think that's
beautiful.
What comes next?
Radical hospitality. Thank you, brother. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Brother Resma.
I'm going to make this sweet and short. Rest. Mm-hmm. I think what's next is rest. I think rest is actually a revolutionary experience for the black body. I believe we've been conditioned to be override and be workhorses. Mm-hmm. And for us to actually claim rest and naps and mint juleps and black men frolicking and like all of that stuff. I think rest. So
thank you.
That's what's next.
Thank you, brother. Mm-hmm. Thank you, brother. I'll like Brother Orlan to say something and I'll just say thank you.
Yeah, I have some review to do.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I've not reviewed Los Angeles. I've not reviewed Bahia deeply enough to say that the architecture over time becomes consciousness. Mm-hmm. So if I'm looking at that, I'm also looking at what has moved through me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Place, time, the patterns of conversations that are articulated. So the film will show something different than my review and consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So for me, in a way, I love to utilize my energies, particularly in hosting the invisible realities that will never be caught on film.
Absolutely.
But in review, it comes into imagination.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's important that I have an imaginative way
to
look at what happened, not just a literal way of what happened. It's something has to go into the deep, deep, deep dark aspects of my life, where the camera can't go.
Where the camera shouldn't go.
Can reach. Right. Mm-hmm. And I can only do it because there's something else as a faculty for that kind of observation. That's it. So I also need the time to do it.
That's exactly.
Yeah.
So yes. Yeah, I'm going to make that space.
That's it.
Thank you, brother. Thank you. And I will not add anything at this time except to say thank you for the conversation. Thank you for.
Thank you.
We've been up on a mountain. We've eaten the food of the gods. We've drank the wine of the spirits, and we are here now. Our mortal bodies need rest, and it is good to rest. It is good to go down now, to descend again, but in an action of resting.
Yes,
so
let me just add one thing. Somewhere along the line, someone promised us Nigerian jollof rice.
Yes, yeah. I wonder who that person is. Oh my gosh. I wonder who that person is.
I want to say.
You know, this is the part that he's not going to allow. He's not going to allow that part.
And I want to say that someone has been enjoying Nigerian food. And,
every day.
But before you leave, there will be some Nigerian food.
Any fufu? I need some fufu.
Pounded yam.
You would get pounded yam.
Okay. Not fufu.
You would get jollof rice.
I need some pounded yam with some
still want
chicken.
Pounded yam.
Bayo would get his pounded yam.
Yes, yes.
And Victoria, you'll get a bit off. You will get a bit off.
In our neighboring
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, everyone.
You,
and we'll meet you out there. Good night.
Yes. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for listening to this episode of For the Wild. The music that opens and closes this episode is by 808XRI, and with courtesy of the Leaving Records record label, the music breaks you heard today are by The Growth Eternal. For the Wild is created by Ayanna Young, Julia Jackson, Erica Ekram, Jackson Kroof, Evan Tenenbaum, and Jose Alejandro Rivera.